I'll go ahead and introduce you, Mom. For everyone who is just joining us or who has joined, just to make sure, if you could please press 4-star, that's the number 4, and then the star button on your handset, on your phone, then that will mute everyone else so that Mom and the speaker that she has coming on tonight can speak to you and share what they have to share with you tonight. I'm going to go ahead and hand it over to my mom. My mom is a successful creator of many, many businesses in her lifetime, and probably the one most of you all are familiar with it is the Elijah Company. And the Elijah Company at one point was one of the largest homeschool supply companies in the world. And she has, at present, she is working on Homeschool Marketplace, which is where you all are getting your information from as far as this teleconference goes. But I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to her. She's an amazingly successful businesswoman, and hopefully what she has to share tonight will be very insightful to you all and will help you all to grow your own businesses as well. So here's my mother, Ellen Davis. Listen to her. She has a lot of experience. She is my business mentor personally. So for those of you just joining, please press the number 4 and star to mute yourself. So, Mom, if you'd like to take it away, here is Ellen Davis.
Okay. Thanks so much for that great intro, James. I feel like some kind of celebrity or something. But first of all, I'd like to encourage everyone to go. I should have sent this out a lot earlier, but I didn't even have the handout ready till this afternoon. But if you haven't already gotten your handout and printed it out, go to your computer and go to homeschoolmarketplace.com/bizincinfo.html. That's homeschoolmarketplace.com/BIZ as in zebra, INCINFO.html. That's bizincinfo, like business incubator information, .html. And download the handout for the first call, because what I wanted to do was not only kind of present an idea and a concept, but give you the background thinking for the concept before we even got into more sharing about the idea. I first had this business incubator idea probably about 4 or 5 years ago when I spoke with Mike Bickle and Bob Fraser at the International House of Prayer, because they've been very successful at starting businesses and then bringing interns in to help manage, run the business, invest in the business, and then eventually own the business. So they have teams that own it. So I thought maybe I could do something a little bit different, in that the hardest part about getting a business off the ground, well, there are two hard parts. First part is getting a team that you can trust, that will actually get the job done and that can work together, that doesn't have any ego that they're involved in, that they have to prove something. But you have a smooth-running team that pulls everything together and you work together and create something. The second part of it is money. And frankly, you can spend your life savings, all your family's life savings, and a whole bunch of angel investors' life savings getting a business off the ground. And most of that money in the beginning is spent on getting the team together, getting people to actually, who can do the different jobs required for the business startup, and getting an infrastructure built, in other words. And so I began experimenting with the idea of, well, what if we created our own infrastructure where people traded time and energy for a potential piece of the profit, depending on how much they contributed. And that way, we just bypass the whole team building part, we bypass the whole investing hundreds of thousands, possibly millions of dollars in getting the business off the ground. And it may take longer to get there, but we'll get there. And when we do get there, it's not one person who owns the business or who's sharing in the profits of the business, but it's a whole team of people who've actually been co-builders in a business. So that was my initial concept. And so what I'd like to do is go ahead and explain a little bit of the background for the thinking, because the thing I've noticed about people is the difference between people who actually are successful in business and people who are not. By the way, interesting statistic, the Small Business Administration says over half of all small businesses fail within the first 5 years. And in the next 5 years, 90% of those fail. So you're already starting off with the statistics against you as far as having a successful small business or a home business. So that was another reason I thought about this team approach was a business incubator model has shown a 75% success rate in business startups. So you're already beating the average if you have an incubator model for building a business. But what I realized was the difference between people who are very successful at business and people who got stuck at a certain point was the way they thought and their almost like their worldview about business. So what I want to do is just go through, a lot of you probably know this, it's probably like business 101 to you. Some of you this may be totally unfamiliar with. But a lot of what I'm going to share with you tonight comes from Robert Kiyosaki's book, Cash Flow Quadrant, which if you have not read that book, it is probably the book you need to read. So Cash Flow Quadrant by Robert Kiyosaki, a lot of this is information that I've gotten from him and from other people who have successful businesses. So if you'll get that handout, let's just go through it together real quickly, and then we'll talk about how we can put these ideas together and some just projects we're thinking about, things like that. So first of all, I want to welcome you to the Homeschool Business Incubator, the first call. If you have any questions, if something comes up and jogs your mind, we're going to have kind of a question and answer session during the call. Email them to me at, I've got the email address there, it's bizinc, B-I-Z-I-N-C, at homeschoolmarketplace.com. And we're going to be checking those emails throughout the call. Before I start into this handout, let me just let my friend Tim Lakey speak a little bit, if he's had anything jog his mind that he wants to speak about, because he's been very instrumental in my thinking and pulling this business incubator concept together. So go ahead and, Tim, say whatever you might want to say.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for coming on the call. Well, I'm excited about this. One of the things that I really believe in is that when we start businesses, the people who create the businesses in the traditional model, the people who do the hard work often don't end up with very much of the final product. And so most businesses that regular people get to be part of, they're really either just an employee, maybe they get some stock options. Or if you start the business yourself, you're limited to such a small scope, because a lot of times people start a business themselves, they're just, all they can do is start, say, a doctor's office or a massage therapy business. And so the really big businesses that make the money in the market are combinations of a lot of teamwork. And in today's model, when you're part of a team, you're getting paid, and some other people that really own the business and control the money take the lion's share of the profit as the business goes on in the future. So one of the things we're trying to do here is to create a new model where people can work from home, they can contribute their skills to interesting and exciting businesses, and then get a share in the future profits of the business and be able to get residual income. You don't get paid up front because you're actually going to share in profit. And so because of the evolution of the internet, it's much more possible to do that now than ever before. You can have people from all over the country, all over the world, working together in kind of a virtual team and create a business that actually produces great value and derives a fair amount of income. So this is kind of an experiment, and we're going to kind of corral you guys into possibly some different projects. And so right now we're just kind of giving you an overview. Some of you have turned in your information about yourselves. We really appreciate that. That's very helpful to us to kind of get an idea where you're at, what you're looking for. And so I'd encourage everyone else who hasn't done that yet to do that. And thanks for joining us.
Okay, let's just run through this handout real quickly, and so you'll know where our thinking is coming from. First of all, if you have questions, email them to bizinc@homeschoolmarketplace.com. That's B-I-Z-I-N-C. And if you haven't gotten the handout yet, you can go to homeschoolmarketplace.com/bizincinfo.html and just follow along. I've got this quote from Robert Kiyosaki. That's a picture of him up here. What the rich teach their kids about money is very different from what the poor and middle class teach their kids. And if you've read any of his books, they're all about the difference in thinking about money and about business. And the one other thing I need to just mention real briefly that we'll go over later, probably in future calls, is I've found a lot of Christians have poor attitudes about money, very negative attitudes about money, and they have some association with something negative when it comes to money. And that same association, that negative association with money or wealth or becoming rich, that carries over into building a business. And that's the very worst attitude you can have if you want to build a business, because what you're doing is you're sabotaging yourself the whole time. You're trying to create a profit if you think negative thoughts about money or wealth. You're just keeping your, you're creating barriers to ever having wealth and ever creating wealth. And so that's the first thing I just want to say. Business, successful business building has to do with your mentality more than it has to do with your skill. Because I have seen absolute, like, I don't want to call them idiots, but people who should never have made a fortune in business do so simply because they had an attitude that worked for them and they were able somehow to round up the skills. If you've ever seen Forrest Gump, you understand about his Bubba Gump company. It's a lot of times it has nothing to do with skill or information. It has more to do with like an attitude of what you think about money, openness to opportunities, ability to take risks, things such as that. So this is a very foundational thing, is an understanding of cash flow and understanding of the different quadrants that people typically create income in. So if you go down to the bottom of page one, I have the cash flow quadrant. It's EBSI. At the top of page two, it shows that these different quadrants are the employee, the business owner, the self-employed, and the investor. And so the typical streams of income, the typical ways people create income are they're an employee, they have a job, creates active income, or they're self-employed. They also have a job, it's just that they work for themselves. And I'll tell you, from years and years of being self-employed, that is the hardest quadrant to be in, and you want to get out of that quadrant as fast as you can. The third quadrant is the business owner. And this is the income from a business owner typically comes from investments that provide residual income. In other words, they own something that continues to create money irregardless of the amount of work they put into it. Whereas on an employee and a self-employed side of the quadrant, the money only comes in when you work for it. And the final one is the investor quadrant, and that's you're not working for money anymore, your money's working for you because you have investments that provide residual passive income for you. So our goal in the business incubator is to pull everybody out of employee or self-employed into business owner and then eventually into investor. So let's just go through the four quadrants. Employee, you have a job. You work for someone else or for someone else's system. Most big businesses have a system. Most franchises like McDonald's or Burger King or Olive Garden or whatever, they have a system. Everything's run exactly according to a system, and you work for the system. You value security. This is something that's really important, the different values of the different quadrants. Because what you value is going to motivate you. And if you value security and benefits more than you value money or independence or freedom to make your own decisions, you're going to gravitate toward being an employee, and you're going to gravitate toward, the thinking will be, if I need more money, I'm going to work a second job. But if you look down at self-employed, well, because you generate income based on trading time for money. If you look at the next slide, which is self-employed, you actually have created your own job. You work for you. You are the system. And you value control and independence more than money. Self-employed people are willing to take risks because they want to be independent and they want to be able to control what they're doing with their life more than they care about money. So they'll go through, they'll make tremendous sacrifices, take risks, whatever, and they'll lose it and they'll get it, and they'll lose it and they'll get it. But you're still generating income based on your own work, and you're trading results for money. Now, because you value control and independence more than money, that's going to be a basic motivator in your decision-making process. And the trap for self-employed people is their ego, that desire to be a business owner and to be looked at as someone who has their own business. And a lot of times they're not really good team players because the ego gets in the way. So what we want to do is move beyond the self-employed quadrant. The next quadrant is business owner. This is you create, control, or own a system. Usually it starts off as a self-employed thing, but then you make a system out of it where it kind of runs itself after a while. You're not having to be there. You can go on vacation, the business will still run. If you're self-employed, a lot of times you can't go on vacation. And if you're an employee, you only go on vacation when the boss tells you you can. You've created a system. The system works for you. You value freedom and responsibility more than money. So, in other words, your desire to be free is more important than your desire to make money. You generate income based on other people's time and results. So you've got people working for you. They're the one putting in their time, their results, that are generating income for you. The last one is the investor. The investor is you invest in a system. The investment works for you. It's not a trade-off of time for money anymore. It's not a trade-off of results for money anymore. It's a trade-off. You are creating a system, or you're creating an investment or an asset that actually works for you. You value money and you generate income based on other people's time, results, and money. So I hope that's fairly clear. Let's go down to the quadrant. If you look on the left side of the quadrant, employee, self-employed, this is what you call active income, where you work for your money. There's certain mentalities that are based, that are in this left side of the quadrant. It's based on fear of losing. It's based on planning not to lose. The other thing from a tax standpoint is there are very few tax advantages, and the focus is more on accumulating stuff, which is basically liabilities like houses, cars, things that you have to continually pay for, but they're not appreciating in value. But on the right side of the quadrant, there's the business owner, the investor, and the whole name of the game here is creating passive income. In other words, how much money can you make when you're not working? Because your money's working for you. And it's based on a willingness to risk. It's based on playing to win instead of playing not to lose. There are many, many tax advantages. And the focus is on accumulating more assets that create passive income for you. If you look down at the next slide, which is on the top of page 4, income of the wealthy, less than 30% of their income comes from straight working a job. More than 70% comes from their assets working for them, their investments working for them. But if you look at the income of the poor, and this probably applies to the middle class too, more than 80% of their income comes from being an employee, working a job, working for someone else, getting a paycheck. And less than 20% comes from some sort of investment, probably from the stock market, some kind of dividends, investing in CDs, things such as that. So I think you can see from these slides that it is a whole different worldview. It's a whole different way of playing the game. It's a whole different mentality not only about what you value, whether you value security or freedom, but it's about where your money comes from. So here are the cash flow patterns. If you think in terms of everybody except the homeless or someone who is jobless has some source of income, they have expenses, they may have assets, and they may have liabilities. So if you look at the cash flow pattern of the poor, they usually don't have assets, and they may or may not have liabilities, because if they're poor, they usually don't have a car payment or a house payment or something. So their income comes straight in from a job, and it goes right down to pay for expenses and outs. And the thinking is, how can I work harder to pay my bills? And I already said, if you're in the employee quadrant, your first thought when you need more money is to take a second job. Here's the cash flow pattern of the middle class at the top of page 5. The thinking is, how can I work harder to afford more stuff? Because the middle class seems to accumulate experiences, education, stuff. Still, the income is coming in from a job. This time, usually it goes, most of their expenses has to do with something like house payments, mortgages, car payments, credit card debt, things like that. So it goes straight through the expense column to the liabilities, which would be, and incidentally, most people think their home is an asset or their car is an asset, but an asset is something that pays you money for keeping it. So if your house isn't paying you money, then it's not an asset, it's a liability. Now, if you have a rental property, yes, it's an asset, it's paying you money. So in the middle class, the cash flow pattern is income comes in through a job, goes out through paying for liabilities such as a house, mortgage, car payments, credit card debt, et cetera, and expenses. Now let's look down at the cash flow patterns of the wealthy. The thinking there is, how can I acquire more assets that will work for me? It's not how can I work harder, it's how can I acquire more assets. In this case, income goes to buying assets. That arrow that comes straight down, it goes straight to buying assets, which produce income. So there's this little circle over to the left. The wealthy may also have a job that income's coming in, but the basic circle they're trying to build is income comes in, it buys an asset that creates more income, which comes in, which buys an asset that creates more income. As far as their expenses, they still have expenses. They still may have liabilities like their own home and their own car that they have to pay for, but they have this ever-rotating circle of assets that create income. So that's the cash flow pattern we would like to think in, where we have assets that are creating passive income or residual income for us, and that's what pays our expenses. And actually, Robert Kiyosaki says you're only successful if you have more passive income coming in than your expenses. And if you've ever played his Cash Flow 101 game, that's the whole name of the game, is you've got to get to the point in the game where your passive income exceeds your expenses. So that's the ideal. That's the ideal life. Very few of us have it. I have to be honest, I don't have it yet. I have had times in my life where I've had it, and then things have happened, circumstances have come along to change things. But I'm at the place where I almost have it again. So anyway, let's look at typical streams of income at the bottom of page 5. An employee has a job that provides active income. The self-employed has a job that provides active income, but the only difference is the self-employed works for themselves. The business owner has business investments that provide residual or passive income, and an investor has investments that provide residual passive income. So as we were thinking about this business incubator, our idea was, how can we get a whole bunch of people over to the right side of the cash flow quadrant, where they're business owners and investors in the businesses that they're co-creating. And so we get into that cash flow pattern of the wealthy, where the assets are creating passive income that we pay our expenses out of. So here we go, the path to success. Get into the B quadrant as soon as you can, then move from there to the I quadrant. Instead of working hard to pay bills, work hard to acquire assets that will generate income to pay your bills for you. So, how to become a B. Actually, there are very few assets that pay back much more than the original investment, and one of them is education. And so when we thought about creating a homeschool business incubator, we thought about creating it as a mentoring program that would actually educate in business building, because you can lose everything, but if you know how to build a business, you can turn around and start another one tomorrow. And you can get back on your feet. You know, you may have to borrow money from family and friends for a while, but you're going to get back on your feet, because what you know is going to put you back where you need to be. So you can never have too much learning and too much investment in your education skill. And that's why I don't even want to tell you the figure for the amount of money I've spent going to conferences. That's why I keep encouraging everybody, go to this internet marketing conference, go to this stock market conference, go to this real estate conference, invest in this program. You can never have too much investment in education if it has to do with something that is going to create livelihood for you. So I have spent so much money going to conferences, probably between Tim and me and James, who knows, we could have in the six figures of money that we've spent educating ourselves on how to create successful businesses. The second way of becoming a B is to find a mentor and an advisor. And Tony Robbins always says, if you want to do something, find somebody else who already knows how to do it and copy what they do. And that's exactly what you've got to do, because there's a system to it. And there's it's almost like secrets that you have to find, and people are the secret keepers. You have to find the secret keepers and get the secrets from them in order to do what you need to do. And the third way to become a B is to develop or buy a system. Now, by system, I don't mean like the educational system or something. I mean a business system. Like McDonald's is a system. McDonald's is not in the business of selling hamburgers. McDonald's is in the business of replicating a system so that you can go to any McDonald's anywhere in the world. I've been to McDonald's in France. I've been to McDonald's in Ireland. I've been to McDonald's in England. The French fries always taste the same. The hamburgers are the same. The prices may be different, but it's the same. They've replicated a system. They found a successful system, and they just repeat it over and over and over and over. So you think you're buying hamburgers from McDonald's, but what you're doing actually is supporting their system. So when we're thinking in terms of becoming a B, which is a business owner, we're thinking in terms of developing or buying a system. So the next and last slide is business incubator goals. And one of the goals I have is for us to create business systems. So let's go through them real quickly, and then I'm going to hand it back over to Tim and let him talk a little bit more. Number one, we want to create teams who co-build successful businesses and share in their profits. And right now, I have more business ideas than I have time or people to do them or help me with them. And several of these ideas we have researched thoroughly and know that they're going to be successful. So what we're going to do is start building teams around these ideas of people who are interested in co-building the business with us and sharing in the profit. The second thing we want to do is mentor those who are interested in developing business building skills. And as homeschoolers, I mean, I can't tell you how many conferences I drag my kids to. They've been to public speaking conferences, internet marketing conferences, real estate conferences, because I wanted them to develop business building skills, because I wanted them to eventually be able to get in the I quadrant, not be stuck in the E or the S. And so they have a lot of business building information and experience that has not yet come to fruition. But I would like to create a mentoring program where not only can we have, articles, input, a website maybe even a membership site where you can, we were even thinking about like $10 a month, you can go on the membership site. There's all kinds of business building stuff there. There are opportunities. People could be on there. Like if you really, really know how to flip houses and you're willing to help somebody else learn how to do it, we would be like a system where we connect mentors with people who want to be mentored in a certain area. So we've got a whole lot of different things that we're thinking about doing. The third business incubator goal is we want to continually generate new businesses and new business ideas. And that's why in the initial email you got when you signed up for the business incubator, I asked you to send me not only information about yourself, your skills, what you'd be interested in participating in, but do you have an idea that's just been sitting there and you know it's a killer idea, but you just don't know where to go next with it? Let's pull these ideas out. And, you know, of course, everybody's like, oh, I don't want anybody to know my idea because they'll steal it from you. Well, that's the one thing you have to have is an attitude of an abundance about business, because there's plenty of money out there. There's plenty of opportunity out there. So the best way to get the money and the opportunity is to bring people into your idea and help them cause it to come to pass. So we want to continually generate new businesses and new business ideas. And the final thing is what I just talked about with systems. Just like McDonald's has a system that works anywhere, anytime, you just buy a McDonald's franchise, they give you the whole system, they send you to McDonald's University, and you can run a McDonald's. We want to create systems that we can apply to businesses and just spin businesses off, one business after another. It just goes through the system. And that's really, if I had to say why most businesses fail, they don't have a system. So what we're going to do is we're going to create systems that businesses can fit into that have been proven to succeed. And so we just keep fitting them into the mold, and they keep succeeding. And it's very, very rarely does a McDonald's fail. I mean, we're looking at In-N-Outs. They're out in the West, and it's like, man, I wish they were in the East. How do we get an In-N-Out franchise in the East? I've never seen an unsuccessful In-N-Out burger. So anyway, that's the kind of thinking I want you to kind of steep yourself in, because that's the thinking that is going to generate business ideas, that's going to generate motivation for business, that's going to generate the enthusiasm and the energy to keep going even when it gets tough, or even when you hit that hump where you're like, oh my gosh, this is taking forever. When are we going to see the money? And there are going to be humps like that, and there are going to be disappointments, but there's got to be this underlying motivation and mentality that there's abundance out there, and that that's the last thing. I talked to you for a minute in the very beginning about being a Christian, having certain negative ideas about money. Even though Christians talk abundance, a lot of times we tend to not really believe that God wants to bless us. Man, you've got to believe he wants to bless us. And you've got to believe he wants to bless us more than Bill Gates. So if you can get that mentality in your mind where we live in an abundant universe, abundant opportunities, abundant God, he's just waiting for us to step up to the plate and start getting something done for him. So that's about all I have to say. I'm going to hand it over to Tim for a few minutes, and then I'm going to be checking the emails that are coming in, and we'll see if there are any questions that have come up so far. So, Tim, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
Hey, Ellen, look at the chat notes I sent you. Yeah, that was really good, cover of that stuff. One of the things on abundance, when I teach my business seminar, I ask people, how many opportunities in the world are there to do a business that can make $1,000 a year? And everybody feels like there's a lot of those, maybe millions, maybe even billions of opportunities that can make $1,000 a year. Then I say, okay, how many opportunities do you think there are? Now, this doesn't mean opportunities that people are doing. This could be anything that's never been thought of. How many possible opportunities are there that can make $100,000 a year? And people start to feel like there's a lot less of those. And then when I ask how many that can make $10 million a year, people feel like there's not very many. When I say how many different opportunities do you think exist that could make billions of dollars a year, and people feel like maybe there's a few at any moment in the world existing. But the truth of the matter is that there's actually infinite possible opportunities in the billion-dollar range, in the million-dollar range, all the way down to the $1,000 range. The reason we don't see lots of businesses that do billions of dollars is that there's not many people who can look at the world, look at the market, and perceive a billion-dollar opportunity. There's probably just a handful of people in the world today that think in terms of billion-dollar opportunities. So if you step back and realize that God made the world so abundant that there's actually literally an unlimited supply of great business ideas and opportunities that could be that people just aren't seeing. So the real problem and why we don't make more money and why we don't start better businesses is that we have a kind of a financial thermostat set inside of us that limits our vision, limits what we're willing to look at for ourselves to small things. And I'm not just talking about, that includes myself. I have that same thing. So one of the things we want to do, I've found that when you put a team together, the synergy of a team begins to break down the small thinking that people have. And I think there's something where it's easier for me to say, oh, by myself, I don't know if I could make $1 billion, but if I had the right team, maybe I could make $1 billion this year. And if you ask yourself that question, if I was on the right team with the right idea so that I wasn't responsible to know everything, but I was contributing what I'm good at, do I feel like I could be part of something that makes a lot of money? And almost everybody would say yes to that. So we have a built-in sense that if we work well with other people, if we can be on the right team, the right time, the right place, that we can do far better than we would on our own. And I believe that's true. I think God made human beings not to function independently. He made us to work together. And there's lots of, lots of Bible about that. So in business, what we want to do is facilitate the creation of some teams that are going to do some neat things. And, you know, we have a great structure for that. We have a lot of thought that's gone into this. In some ways, this is the culmination of, 40 years of business experience combined between the two of us that we're bringing to you. But ultimately, what we're trying to do is just package some incredible opportunities down into bite-sized pieces so that anyone, even a high school kid who's good at surfing the internet and finding things, can contribute and can get a residual value back from helping to create this new business or the new product or whatever it is that's being done. So I think we're going to – why don't we take a quick break, let everyone run to the bathroom, get a drink of water, and we're going to start up again in about 2 minutes. And in the meantime, we're going to look at some of your emails and we'll go over your questions. Okay, we'll be right back.
While you're taking your break, if you're still listening, I wanted we had a couple of emails about the website where they could download the handout. It's www.homeschoolmarketplace.com/biz, B-I-Z, Inc., I-N-C, info, I-N-F-O, dot H-T-M-L. So I apologize if you missed the handout, but I tried to give the address as many times as I could during the presentation, but the handout is there. You can download it and print it off, and I am going to post this call, the recording of this call, so you can go back and listen to it and take notes if you missed the handout or something. So anyway, it's homeschoolmarketplace.com/biz, B-I-Z, Inc., I-N-C, info, I-N-F-O, dot H-T-M-L. And at the very top of that page, there's a link you can press to download the PDF of the notes that we were going through, the handout that we were going through. So just take a quick break. Get some water, go to the bathroom, we'll pick up and talk a little bit more about it. Okay, I hope everybody had a chance to run to the restroom and take a little bit of break. What we'd like to do next, we pretty much covered what our concept is. The other thing I want to tell you is we would like to make this organic. And sometimes organic means messy. Like having a baby is kind of a messy thing. But because this is a new idea, it's an experiment that we're doing, we'd like for it to just kind of grow organically and be able to go with whatever comes up. So that will have more significance to you later when we start running into problems. But right now, I want you to know that we don't have, like, anything set in stone exactly how this is going to run. I'd love to be able to send you 14 steps or a system that we've already created, but we've never done this before. But we feel like it should be something that should really, really work if we had teams of people that just wanted to get together and co-create businesses and share in the profits of them. And so what we will probably do is we've already gotten a show of hands of people who want to be interested. There are already quite a few of you that have sent in your information. And so what we're going to do now is start building teams based on the information that's been sent in. And we will send out to you different projects and ask that you might be interested in being on them. Now, what we will do is we're going to have you sign a non-disclosure agreement before we give you some of these ideas that we've already thoroughly researched and we know that are going to be profitable. So this is serious. If you commit to work on a project with us, you're going to have to commit to not disclose any of the details of it and to say, even if you decide later to drop out, the project remains the team's project and you can't take any of the part of the project with you. So I want you to understand that this is normal business operating procedure. Every business I've ever joined working for someone else, there's always been a non-disclosure agreement. It's not anything technical or legal. It's just we want to protect the ideas that come up. And I know there are quite a few of you that are going to submit your own ideas. I don't want them to be taken from you in any way. So we're going to do everything we can to protect the ideas, to protect the team, to protect the integrity of the whole project. So that's where we're going to go from here. So what I'd like for you to do now is go ahead and press 4-star and let's unmute everybody and just have a question and answer time. If you have a question, if there's something you want to discuss, if you know, just throw it out. And what if you say your name first and then say what your question is, you have to press 4-star to unmute yourself. And then just ask whatever question. If we don't have any questions, and then mute yourself again so there's not any background noise by pressing 4-star again. And if we don't have any questions, we'll just have closing comments and close. If we do have questions, we'll take them as long as we feel like people have patience for them. So go ahead now. If you have any questions, press 4-star and tell us your name and your question.
Hi, Ellen. This is Donna Sweet, and this might seem like a silly question, but is there much startup costs?
Go ahead. I'm going to let him answer that.
That depends on the project. For the most part, we've tried to pick things that aren't going to require any money on your part to get going. And also, if there's small costs, then we'll try to have the business incubator pick that up. So we mostly want team members to be contributing their time, not particularly money. That's not to say that once a project develops and becomes more mature, that there might not be that possibility. But in the beginning, you shouldn't have to worry about that.
Right. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have another question? Press 4-star. Any other questions?
Don't be shy. Even if your question seems simple or not worth asking, go ahead.
Yeah, I do have another question. Now, when you're talking about, you know, teams, now are you going to, will there be a limit of how many people will work on a team, or is there a general, you know, number of people per team?
That, again, depends on the project. That's a good question. Thank you. For the most part, there's not particularly a limit on the team per se. However, let's say, for example, a project needs to make a logo, and they've got 8 graphics people on the team, and they're all working on making the logo. That may not be the best use of people's time. I mean, they might do better off to have a few people work on the logo and maybe have some of the other graphics people doing something else. So in that regard, there's sort of a practical limit to doing the work itself, but no, there's not really a limit per se on a team.
Okay. Well, and I did want to say there are a lot of projects that don't, where we need all kinds of people, not just people that have specific technical skills like knowing Photoshop or knowing how to put a web page up. There's just a lot of research that needs to be done and a lot of writing that needs to be done, a lot of thinking through. And I gave you a list on that BizInc, Homeschool Marketplace /BizInc info.html of all the different things that we were going to need people to do. And sometimes it may seem like the person that has the highly developed technical skill is contributing more to the project, but actually it's the person that provides the glue that holds the team together or that is willing to have the team meetings and encourage them. That's the person that's the most important to the whole project. So don't think if you don't have a highly specialized skill that there's not a place for you, because it's some of these projects are going to be so huge that they're going to take a lot of different kinds of people, a lot of different levels of skill. And like I said, I don't know if we said this before, but teenagers who are motivated, interested, good workers, have a good work ethic, they are more than welcome. And I have known teenagers who got involved in businesses doing different things and then moved right on up to having their own businesses. So that's what I'm hoping will happen too, is in the process of doing this, you'll not only get the bug, but you'll get the mentality and the mindset needed and the experience where you can start spinning your own businesses off. So anyway, that's, I want to encourage you, whatever you have to contribute, we're going to need so many different kinds of contributions. It really doesn't matter whether you have a specialized skill or not.
Okay. This is Eunice from New York.
So are there any other questions?
Yeah, Eunice from New York is just starting a question.
Oh, okay, sorry. Can you speak up just a little?
Yes. As a homeschool mom with young children, how would you require time?
Well, the way we're going to set it up is where we'll probably have a spreadsheet or some kind of thing that keeps track of the time contributed, and then when it comes time to allocate the profits, it will be purely based on the amount of time that you've input in the project. So it doesn't really matter whether you have a whole lot of time or just a little bit of time. If you're interested, we would love to have you on a project. And so, and you'll be amazed at how much time you find if you have something that you're really interested in. I never thought I had any time at all, but then if I got like really obsessed with something, it was like, oh, my gosh, I just spent 10 hours doing that, and I didn't even know it. So don't worry about that. It's whatever you're willing to contribute. There's no time frame, and there's no limit set on things. And like I said, remember, this is organic. We're going to learn as we go. So anyway, I'm going to let Tim answer some, too.
Well, I just wanted to make a comment on that one. It depends also on the project, and I keep saying that, but on some projects, there may be certain tasks that have a time deadline to them, or it's extremely detrimental to the project. For example, let's say you're starting a new web business and you've thought of the domain names, and someone's going to take the work item of going and registering the domain names, and then they don't do it. And then in the next meeting, a week later, it turns out those domain names got taken somewhere else, and they're not available to the team. So in the sense that some work items may carry with them an intrinsic requirement to be completed by a certain time or a certain amount of time to be done. But in general, most work items on a project are going to be fairly relaxed as far as the schedule because, and I don't know if we've said this or not, but don't quit your job yet. Wait until you have lots of money coming in, then you can quit your job. But in the meantime, since you're not quitting your job, everyone on the project, we're assuming, is doing this with their spare time. So there's a more relaxed nature to these projects than if you just show up at IBM with your resume and they hire you, you put your suit on. You know, that's a whole different ballgame. What we're talking about is groups of people working from home as they can, the best they can, when it works for them to do it. And so, So anyone else have a question?
Yes, I do. This is Laura in San Diego, and Alan and Tim, thank you for having this. Mine is, I have a kind of a two-part question, and it is a little bit along the line of what we're talking with timing. I do hear clearly you're saying it depends on the project, but my question is, does each project have a fairly designated timeline of what happens when? And my question is regarding the flexibility for the next 3 to 6 months with summer coming up, with vacation times maybe happening. Would it be clear on what would need to be done when, so that you're not letting the team down if you've signed up for something? And so if you could address that part. And if I heard you right, or if I understand the concept of this, at some point this will become kind of an ending project where it becomes more of an asset, it's more generating its own, and there's somewhat of an end where it doesn't require as much input. Is that part of this model too then?
Yeah, that's an excellent question, both of those. So to the first one, as far as flexibility, you know, again, it not only does it depend on the project, but it sort of depends on the role that you have in a project. So if you're the team leader on a project, you've got a little bit less flexible thing going on because it's kind of your job to make sure everybody else is doing their job. But on the other hand, if the whole project decides to be flexible, then, you know, so let's say, for example, you're doing a new website magazine and your team leader says, hey, it's summer vacation, I'm going to be gone for a month, what are you guys doing? And everyone on the team is like, yeah, we're all gone. Then it's fine for the team to just say, okay, we're just going to take a month off, and we'll pick this up when we get back. It's really flexible in that regard, and you'll kind of work those issues out with each other, with the teams that you're on. And
Tim, so, in that regard, in the project, is it clear when you start the project that it's not halfway through the project that you realize your position or your role then has a certain commitment to it that you would have trouble fulfilling? My concern is in not letting the team down and being aware ahead of time of what would be required.
Right. Yeah, I think part of that's really just the team leader doing a good job of letting you know.
Okay.
And we may do some different experimental things with leaders, because one of the things we're really shooting for here is kind of non-ego-based teams. We've both done a lot with teams, and one of the things sometimes happens is once there's a lot of money involved or something's created that's obviously going to produce a lot of money, it's amazing how people's egos can jump into the pot. All of a sudden, everyone feels like they own it and that they were the one that really made it. And so one of the problems with having one person team leader the whole time is that they can get the feeling that they did this, and they forget the value that the team members contributed. So we may actually have, like, rotating team leaders so that everyone can get a turn seeing what it's like running the team as well as being on it. But we're going to sort of do things like that sort of on an ad hoc basis as we feel each team needs. But as far as, like, you knowing the expectations, basically, this is different from anything you've probably ever been involved in, because literally there aren't any expectations. I mean, if you contribute, you'll retain value in the project. If you don't, you won't. And so, like, if someone gets on a project and they never really do anything, I mean, eventually a team leader will probably come and say, hey, I'm scraping you off the list because there's no point having you in our emails and our phone conferences. You never contribute. But on the other hand, I've started businesses where, you know, one of the people on my team never seemed able to really contribute anything. And then one day we needed a certain type of person with a certain type of knowledge. And this friend of mine actually went, and his college professor at school was like the world expert on what the company was looking for. And he went and he told them about the company and brought him in. And that guy ended up being on the board of the company. So even though the school kid didn't contribute that much to the actual company directly by bringing in someone who did end up being very important to the company. He contributed that way, and so he got a share because of what he brought in. So that's kind of the generalized principle, is that if you, what we're going to have you do is, if you feel drawn to a project, then we're going to ask you to sign up. Then you'll get more details about that project. Then we'll start forming a team. And then organically, kind of a schedule and expectations and sort of the approach of how things are going to be done, that'll all get worked out. And at first, Ellen or I or both of us will tend to be the team leaders on these in the beginning. But what we'd like to do is start as soon as we can handing these over to you guys, because we literally have, between the two of us, we literally have 100 different businesses that we know could be started right now and create tremendous wealth. And we can't capitalize them on them because we're just two people. So we need people to help us, and in exchange, we can give you the opportunity to be part of something on the ground level that hardly ever is found out there in the market. And okay, now on the other part, what was the second part of the question?
About, is there kind of a maturation point where it becomes self-running or an end in sight?
Yeah, that's good. That's a good point too. And yes, that's the goal. Ultimately, these projects are going to be kind of ad hoc, sort of organic. But as they produce something that goes to market, or they begin to produce a cash stream, they will be formed into more static entities, say corporations or whatever. And at that point, you know, people would have their ownership or their percentage in the final result. And so I think a good model would be Microsoft. You know, Bill Gates started Microsoft, got his friends together, worked in his garage, and then now Bill Gates doesn't have to work for Microsoft anymore. In fact, he probably hasn't had to work for Microsoft for the last 20 years, but he wanted to because he loved the company. And so I think that's kind of the opportunity here, is if you're part of a project, it becomes successful, it's producing money for you. If you love that company and you love that project, then by all means, you know, we'd want you to be able to continue on with it. And we hope that each project that ultimately becomes successful becomes a company. We hope that there'll be at least a group that wants to remain the core team to run that company long term.
Thank you. That was very helpful.
Sure. Thanks for the good question.
Yeah, those are good. Anybody else have a question? Press 4-star and unmute yourself.
Yeah, if you can't hear yourself asking the question, that means you're still muted.
This is Warren from Columbia, Maryland.
Hi, Warren.
Yes, thank you very much for having us on this call. My question is, I want to get an idea of the timeline as we move forward with the vision that you have.
Well, the timeline is, yeah, there is a timeline. We're starting now. But effectively, because there's so many of you that signed up, now may be months later for some of you, and now may be next week for some of you. It's hard for me to say how the project will unfold and who will be drawn to what.
But we do have two projects that we've got. I mean, they're just sitting there waiting to build a team around that could be started next week if we had people who stepped up and said, I want to be a part of this. So it's like we've got some that are immediate, some that can be put on hold for a little while, some that, and there may be people that, we already have like a couple of emails of people who have ideas of their own that they want to think about building a team around. Those need to be researched to see the feasibility, see the profitability of the ideas, and if there's really a market for them. And those could be put in the pike. So what we're hoping is this is just it's like almost like a huge think tank or mastermind group where it just continues spinning things off, and people have things they want to contribute in the way of an idea, in the way of work, in the way of a skill, and it just keeps building, 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 because there's no reason if we have enough people, we can't just spin off business after business after business. So that's kind of our idea. We do have something we could start on right away, a couple of projects. We have others that, you know, they're going to take a little more research time, a little more market, analyzing the market kind of time. But anyway, I hope that answers the question.
Let me add a comment on that. Both Ellen and I have done a lot of internet businesses, and so when it comes to internet businesses, we know some things that could be created right away that are easy. And the other interesting thing about some of these internet businesses is that to do the work of them requires very little training. So we could take almost any person and teach them in a very short time how to be a major contributor to some of these internet businesses that we're thinking of starting. So I just want to encourage you that, you know, if something sounds interesting to you when we announce it, go ahead and sign up. Even if you don't feel up front that you have the skills for it, that's fine. Okay, did that answer your question? I guess so. Okay.
Okay.
Anybody else?
Yes, this is Donna Sweet again, and I have a
Donna.
Question. My husband is fully disabled. Now he is a disabled vet, and he also receives Social Security disability. Now, as his wife, if I, you know, starting, you know, business like this, the income, you know, that I generate, would that have an effect on, you know, on his earnings, his disability?
Yeah, that's
earnings.
Something that, that's a really good question, and I would encourage you to, why don't you email us about that, because that, again, is something that's pretty particular to your case, and I can't, neither of us are really qualified. We're not tax or lawyer, you know, we're not tax advisors or lawyers, but I'd be happy to run that by one of our lawyers just real quick. And I could also refer you to somebody that could probably help you figure that out.
Okay, thank you.
But there should be a way to work with that, but we just have to talk about that.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah.
Yeah, no, there should be a way to I'm pretty sure that that's not a problem, but we just have to talk to a good tax person, et cetera, and figure out the right way to do it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Catherine.
Hi.
And I have a question regarding once you get everything set up and you get these teams put together, someone is going to be tracking time and I'm assuming generating checks to pay for work that's done or income that's received once things start rolling. Who's going to be in charge at the top of those procedures?
Well, basically, there's going to be sort of a layered approach to that. Each person that contributes is going to log their time and what they did. So that's the first layer. Then they're going to turn that in to their team leader or the group leader, and that person's going to look over what was done, actually got done, and how much time the person spent, so that if they feel like there's a discrepancy, the two of them can have an adjustment right then. The reason for that is, you know, in a real-world company, I can see if you're sitting at your desk 40 hours a week. Now, I might not feel like you're getting 40 hours a week done, but I at least know you were there. But in a virtual environment, if someone just puts 40 hours down, I mean, how do we know, you know, to an extent we have to just trust them. But more importantly, we can look at what they actually got done. So that's going to be kind of the team leader's job to handle that. And I've done some businesses this way before, and really hardly ever is a problem. But if there is ever a dispute, say, between a team leader and a person on the team or any kind of a disagreement about it, then Ellen and I, in the beginning, would step in and settle that. And we would just hear both sides of the story and just come up with what we felt like was a fair determination. And, you know, there nothing in the world exists that's completely perfectly fair. But I think you'll find as we go along using this system that that we developed that is probably the most fair way to reward people for their work that exists right now. And so even though it may be tweaked a little bit one way or another, in general, I think everyone will feel very happy with how things worked out. And I've used this before.
And then how are the, I understand that part, and then how are the monies handled in the future?
Well, it depends on what kind of a thing it is. Some of these things aren't going to merit becoming a whole company or something like that. I mean, they're going to be just best as a product that sells. Like, let's say, for example, a team works and they create a product and now it's out on the web and it's selling. Okay, well, then that's fairly simple. There's a simple revenue model. Every time it sells, there's revenue. And so basically there's going to be like an accounting department that handles all the checks and everything, and they're going to just take those every month and then just divide it up based on the percentages that everybody had. But if it becomes a company, then it'll be the company's job, obviously, to do that, because there'll actually be an organization with that responsibility.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, good question. Anybody else?
Hi, this is Audrey. I have a question just in general about, after this call is over, can you just kind of outline for us what you see, sort of like what's the next step for us? I know you said you have a couple of ideas that you will be maybe sending out and people can start responding. You'll start putting teams together. Is that kind of what the next step is, or is there something else that you think we need to do?
Yeah, that's it. I don't know if there are any on the call that have not sent in the information about themselves or what they would like to be a part of. But if you haven't done that, that would be your next step, is to send me. And on that bizincinfo.html page, it gives you the email address to send me kind of the four questions that I have you send in. So that would be the next thing. And then from those, we're going to just go through and offer a project to those people that have actually filled in their information and sent it in, and then see how many raise their hands as wanting to be a part of it, and then we'll just move on from there. Did you have something, Tim?
We still are sorting out the whole issue of non-disclosure, because on the one hand, you know, I don't want you to have to sign an NDA before you really know about it. I mean, just to know the name of a project. But on the other hand, we don't want to give out the ideas without people doing an NDA. So we're still kind of working with the lawyers as far as how to handle that issue. So what we may do, and the other thing is, we had such a big response to this that we may go ahead and cut off the ability of people to join for a while until we feel like we've integrated those of you already in. And, of course, first come, first serve. So we're going to try and give you, those of you already in, get the benefit of the early things that are done. But if we do transition to a closed off version of this for a while, then probably what we'll do is just have everyone sign a general NDA as far as the project ideas. And then if you express interest in a project and you come on to a project, you'll probably do another NDA that binds you to that project as far as the internal details of what that's going to be. So there is some legal process involved, but it shouldn't be too bad. And hopefully we'll be able to set it up to where you can do kind of a click-through legal agreement. But, you know, maybe they will have to send you a packet. You'll have to sign it and send it back in.
Okay. Yeah, because it really wouldn't be legal unless you have the signature.
Well, it just depends. Click agreements are binding, actually. But
some types
of legal agreements have to be. Yeah, you know, when you load a piece of software and it says click here if you agree to the terms of use.
Right.
That is binding when you click that.
Okay.
That's why they do it that way. Otherwise, they'd have a little card that you have to sign and mail in. And so back in the 90s, actually, one of the lawyers that worked with me was part of developing the government system on that. But essentially, you know, they had to come up with a way for people to agree to something without having to have a signature.
Ah, true. Okay.
So if it can be like that, that's easier, because on us and on you, because you don't have to send paper. But, you know, if we have to send you some paper, it won't be too bad. And but those are legal documents, so, you know, we would advise you to, if you have a lawyer, have them look at it. And, of course, we're not going to put anything tricky in there, but you know, anytime you're doing a legal document, it's always good to have somebody look at it for you.
My name is Kira Kupak, and I'm calling from or involved in the call from Texas, and I have a question.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, it's about accountability. As team members, is there a way for us to track the accounting of the income that's generated from a project And the second question I have is, who will actually then cut the checks to the individual team members? Where will those checks be generated from?
Well, again, it's similar to an earlier question, but you do have a different twist on it. The accountability, basically, my view is that a team should be fairly open accountability so that, you know, if you're on a team, you should know essentially what's being done and kind of what the percentages are or the contributions are of everybody that's on the team. But there may be times when a team leader feels like some of the detail of that needs to be held back. So we'll kind of have to do that on an ad hoc basis. But essentially, you'll get a kind of a report that shows you, here's how much you did, here's how much it's valued at in terms of the current project. And then when the project starts making money, you'll get a check, like a royalty check or a distribution, depending on how it's set up. And we're going to just have an accounting firm do that, because neither of us wants to sit here and do that. But if a project becomes an actual company, which some of these probably will, then that company would have its own accounting person and so on, or its own accounting services. And at that point, you know, once this is an incubator, so we're only going to take you so far. I mean, once a project becomes an actual real company, it's got its own CEO, maybe it's even raising its own money, it's out there in the market, it's performing. I mean, at that point, we're here as advisors and as friends, but really that company's on its own to go out there and do what it can. Of course, we're always here to provide resources, help recruit more team members, but essentially at that point, it becomes its own entity, and so the team that created it would basically decide those things, and we'd be part of helping set that up, but that'd be a little bit more down the road, I would say, on some of these. But some of them definitely have that capability. So in that case, of course, then you're just part of a company. You'd have shares or whatever was decided to be done as far as how to distribute. That answer your question?
I kind of think I was kind of tracking in a little different direction. I was wondering how we would account for income that would be produced from the product or the service itself.
You mean how it would show up, like, on your taxes?
Well, no. Maybe I'm tracking on the wrong way. I'm trying to figure out the difference between, I know you're talking about the accounting of our time, which is one thing, but I'm talking about the actual income generated from the product or service that project is creating.
Right. Yeah, no, you'd get... So in the early days, there won't be any income, and you just would be seeing the accounting of everyone's effort. But once it becomes a revenue-generated item, then you'd be able to get the accounting of the revenue, expenses, and distributions.
Okay.
And those would be roughly proportional to the contributions that the people made in creating it.
Okay.
Yeah, and as far as your taxes, it's just going to look like regular income.
Okay.
Okay, any more questions?
I have a question.
Okay.
Is this primarily going to be the internet information selling type of things?
Some of them will be, and in fact... We would prefer to do internet things, but there will be actual physical products that are developed. The reason that we head toward the internet is so much easier. But there's no reason why if there were a group that really wanted to be a real estate development group or a real estate investment group or flip houses or any other kind of project like that, if somebody had a great idea for putting together a project, it's not limited to the internet. It's just that that's the easiest way to start is with an internet-based business because the startup costs are so minimal. There will always be people who know how to set up a website or a simple website or something like that. And Tim and I both are so familiar with the sales process and the search engine optimization and marketing and everything having to do with the internet. But we're not going to exclude any project that's not internet-based. But I will say the first couple of them that we have in mind are more internet-based projects. Okay, Tim.
Let me add a little thing, too. Some things can start on the internet and then become more real world as they go. So let's say we created some type of an online store and it became very successful online. There's always the possibility of bringing it the next step into a bricks and mortar type of business. And the other thing too is we're not, when we say internet, we're not just talking about creating info products and internet marketing. We're also talking about creating things that are sort of web services, things that companies use to run their business and they pay every month. So for an example, that would be like a hosting company or a online backup storage company. So there's companies where you pay them to let you back up your data securely online and they keep a copy for you. So if your building burns down, you don't lose all your data. And that's pretty big money, and that's an example of a service. And so each company that's using that may be paying thousands of dollars a month for the use of that service. So those are other really good ways of making money on the internet. And even things like real estate have an internet corollary where business can be started on the internet and then become real. For example, people buy and sell houses on eBay. So I don't want you to feel like it's just going to be pigeonholed with the internet, but it is true that for what we want to do right now to start up quickly with you, some more internet-oriented things are going to get priority. But we do have some ideas for some energy businesses and all kinds of things that we've looked into quite a bit. So.
And we also have been invited to be on teams for other businesses that we feel like there's a possibility we could pull in people who are interested as part of our team to be on their team. So there's just a lot of different opportunities out there.
Well, all of this sounds so very exciting to me.
Well, good. I'm glad you're excited. Bear with us.
Like I said, don't quit your job today.
No, don't quit your job. This is an experiment that we think has a very good possibility of being very successful and exciting and motivating and being a lot of fun, as well as creating, putting some money in our pockets. So,
and we hope to do some things that'll give you some time to meet each other and, you know, maybe have a retreat or a conference where a lot of you guys could come and meet. And certainly teams that have worked together for a while, and especially the ones that became successful, you know, a team may choose to take part of their profit and all go on a cruise or all go camping together. So, you know, as things begin to make money, there's lots of things that can be done to make a team even better. And the other thing, too, is once some of these have made money or have good revenue streams, then we can start looking at projects that have a upfront capital cost to get into them. In other words, we can start going into some bigger markets together. So we kind of like to just have a group of friends that are entrepreneurial and open-minded and love to try exciting things. And, you know, we'll all just try to work together and help each other and just see what God does.
Well, you know, this is really exciting, and I've been praying, you know, with my husband being disabled, just how to start from the bottom and just slowly work up. And this just sounds good.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I hope that it does that for you. I mean, obviously we can't guarantee anything, but, I mean, as far as this is probably one of the best places for that to happen. Well, it sounds like we've covered everything, and it's kind of getting late now. So,
actually, I have
Ellen, do you have any? Is there someone? Is that somebody?
Yes. Yes, Core Phil.
Okay, let's take one more. Go ahead.
I want to go back to the lady who was asking about accountability. Typically, I'm, you know, there's the employee relationship where things are taken out of taxes, things like that. This is a fluid business, and I know that's not going to be the direction you're going, but I think possibly she was asking about whether, you know, in terms of working as subcontractors and getting 1099s, or if we're going to be totally self-employed where we have to you know, file and zoning and things like that. I think that maybe was where she was going. I'm not sure.
Oh, okay.
Could you maybe explain that a little bit better if we're going
sure.
to consider sub?
Yeah, and to some extent that's a little bit hard to predict. I mean, essentially, until one of these makes some money, then the accounting is nothing more than just tracking what everybody did. Once one of them starts to make some money, now there's actual, say, tax consequences and things like that. And so I don't believe that every team will be structured the same way. And so basically when we come to the point where a project starts making money, what I would like to do is actually, you know, get a tax guy on and maybe one of the lawyers on the call, and then just let the team discuss with them the various options of how they can handle that and let them pick what they want to do. But, you know, one real easy way is to give people royalty, you know, kind of 1099 royalty on what they made. But yeah, there's flexibility with that. And, you know, neither of us is a tax professional, so we'll have to have somebody work with the team to determine the best way to handle that.
I just have a little more input. This is Donna Sweet. Now, my husband is, he does taxes for folks, mostly for friends and family right now, and he's going to be taking some tax courses. So this might be even something, you know, that he can
help with.
Join in on in the future.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, if there's people that are lawyers or tax professionals, you know, those are people we can use.
Well, and I noticed in the sign-up, there's several people who are accountants, so they will certainly, there's certainly be a place for them in this whole process. So, anyway, I'm kind of thinking, I mean, the only analogy I can really think of is like a family business where different members do different things, and then they all share in the profits of the business and everything the business provides for them. And that's kind of the concept, is create a group of people who want to work together in that way. So I'm not expecting you to become family, but we do want teams of people who want to look at it that way. We're all working together to create something, and everybody has a contribution they can make. And out of the pool, I'm expecting God to send accountants, lawyers, whatever we need will probably just come our way. So I don't really have to think through all of that at this very moment. I only have to face that if I get to a point in a project where there's a certain skill that's needed and we just don't have it on the team. In that case, we'll probably have to outsource. But right now, there's a pretty good cross-section of skills and interested people that want to be a part of it. So we're just going to try and take it from there.
And thanks for all of you for being willing to join us in this experiment. I think it's going to be fun, at least.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Well, I told you guys that the call would be about an hour and a half, and we were just over that mark. So I want to really thank you for joining us on the call. And I think the next step is any of you who haven't sent in your information about what your skills are, what you'd like to be a part of, if you'll go ahead and send that to me, you can send it to bizincubator@hotmail.com. That's your first step. The second step is you might want to go back and listen. I'll have this call posted probably tomorrow. I'll send you an email. You might want to go back through and listen to it, see if you have more questions, see if there's something that sparks an interest. And then in the next week or so, as we collate all the people who have sent us information, we'll start trying to structure teams and send out ideas to you. So that's where it's going to go from here. And thanks so much. I really just am expecting God to bless this incredibly, and we'll have a lot of fun doing it too. So thank you so much, and have a great evening, and we'll talk to you later.
Sounds
bye.
Good. God bless you both.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you, Ellen.